want to review just a minute from the section we talked about last week, especially. This forms like the first major section in Ecclesiastes. And all of the examples he uses here in these 8 verses revolve around various things that go in cycles. He talks about, you know, the sun, the wind, water, and so forth, and how they just keep going on and on and on. You know, that one generation arises, another generation arises. And so he talks about repetition a lot and cycles in these first in those 8 verses right there. Some of the things he mentions that are repetitive, that go in cycles, human generations, that's one. He says one generation arises and another takes its place. And then that one goes away and another one takes its place. So that endless cycle, one generation comes and then it goes. Another one comes and then it goes. It shows how temporary humans are. All right? How temporary we are. The earth just keeps going through these cycles, but we're very temporary. Not here very long. And he mentions the sun going in cycles. You know, comes up in the east, goes down in the west. Next day, comes up in the east, goes down in the west. Over and over and over. Keeps going over these repetitions. Kind of like one reference I was reading says, kind of like a runner, you know, it goes around a track, starts at one point, goes all the way, and stops at the same point. That's kind of like what the sun does. And the wind, and it just keeps going around and around. There's nothing really accomplished by it. A lot of this has to do with accomplishment in this first chapter, especially the first half. Accomplishment. What's accomplished by these various cycles and these repetitions? It just starts and stops at the same point over and over again. He mentions the rivers. And we mentioned this one. We talked about the water cycle, and it's a cycle. Just repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats over and over and over again. Drives home that point. Even though, you know, the rivers keep pouring water into the ocean, the oceans aren't full. Because just as much goes in, it comes out. Again, it's that repetitive nature of all of these processes in our world. The wind, something else. The wind just continues to blow from north to south or east to west, whatever, and over and over and over and over and over again. Of course, he's leading up to something by using all these examples of all these things that repeat. Gets down to verse 8. He mentions, all things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. This, being a science teacher, you see this all the time. People that don't have belief in God, when they look at this, when they look at all these cycles and how things go, keep going over and over and over again, well, you take God out of the picture like Solomon is doing here, saying, you know, life under the sun without God. When you take God out of the picture, everything is real futile. It's like, well, the sun comes up and goes down. Water keeps pouring into the ocean. Wind keeps blowing. And all atheists are hopeless people. And I read a lot of atheistic stuff just because of what I teach. So many scientists are atheists. And they're most unhappy bunch of folks you could ever imagine. Well, that's what Solomon is getting at in this first part. No wonder people who live life under the sun without God are unhappy. Because they see all of this repetition, all these cycles, and nothing ever seems to be accomplished. You know, it's just, if you take God out of the picture and you just think, well, this all came about naturally, there's no creator, there's no God, and this world just happened, and we're just one big accident. And then that, if you want to read something depressing, read some atheistic work by scientists. It's some of the most depressing stuff you'll ever imagine. And that's what they're forced to conclude, that we're just one great big cosmic accident because there's no God. So all of this has just happened, and there's no point to it. See, Solomon says all is futility, all is vanity, it's all empty without purpose. It is without God. I mean, this world and its existence has no purpose whatsoever. You take God out of the picture. And that's one of the lessons Solomon reinforces in practically every chapter in this book, is that if you leave God out, everything is just without purpose. And that's what atheists end up believing at the end, you know, that there's nothing to. Man is just an accident. There's no purpose for man. He has no purpose on this earth. And you mean they actually write that? Oh, yeah. They actually write that. Man has no purpose.
We have no purpose, but we're causing global warming.
Yeah, there you go. Right. There's no purpose in life. You know, that's what they say. No purpose in it whatsoever. We die, you know, and that's it. You know, everything is just a physical body. Of course, they don't believe in any sort of soul or spirit, obviously. So, and Solomon begins the book by addressing that. That you take God out of the picture, and all of that it's meaningless. It's all meaningless. This world is meaningless if you take God out of the picture. It's meaningless. There's nothing to it. So that's what he says there in verse 8 about how meaningless it is. He says, you know, the eye can't be satisfied, the ear can't be filled with hearing. And especially, you know, he's talking about this human wisdom and trying to understand things purely from a human's point of view without God. Well, you're never going to be satisfied. You aren't. You're never going to be satisfied. Because there's this big empty spot that's God. And so if you take God out of that spot, regardless of how much you learn and how much you understand, you'll never get to a point where you understand man's existence because you don't believe he has one. So there's just a huge void in your life. And Solomon says, you'll never be satisfied. You live life under the sun. It's a meaningless, purposeless existence. And talk about a world that needs that message today. Our world needs that message in a big way. And then these last three verses, 9 through 11, says, that which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything in which it may be said, see, this is new? It's already been in ancient times before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. And we mentioned this last week. You know, the vast majority of people are forgotten in a few years. And even the people that still have some fame after hundreds of years don't gain anything by the fame. You know, we know some famous people, but they didn't gain anything by being famous. They're still dead. They didn't gain anything by being famous. That's what Solomon is saying. There's nothing gained by being famous. Even those few people who gain fame and are still written about in books and people will know. This is brought home to me all the time. I co-teach a couple of classes with a man, and he's younger than I am, but we still remember a lot of the same people and places, and we'll bring it up in class, and we're the only two that know it. The others sit there and just look. You know, totally blank. We still remember, but see, that these young people don't. They don't remember them at all. So see, that idea of being remembered, very few people are remembered. So Solomon, you know, wants people to understand that even if you're famous, you don't gain anything by that. You know, that's nothing to be longed for. Well, I want to do something, so I'll be famous. No, Solomon says that's That's empty. There's nothing to it. So you look at all those things that are repeated, and the cycles, and how if you look at all of those things apart from God, you end up having a very unhappy, sad, depressing, discouraging life. And it's no wonder when you look at our world and see how many people are in that category. Well, no wonder. You know, they're taught that they're no different than any other living thing on earth. You know, they have a lot of things in common with ferns, for instance. From a scientific standpoint, we have a lot of DNA and genes that are very, very similar to fern plants. I don't think of myself as looking much like a fern. But if that's the only way you look at it, purely from that, you know, without any idea of creation or any of that, then you think, you know, I'm kind of like a plant. That's pretty depressing. See, no wonder those people are so discouraged and despondent about things. And but if you want to bring up something about there being a God, oh, there's no God. Absolutely not. Because bringing up the idea that there's a God means bringing up that there's some sort of moral absolutes and ethical standards. And people, especially in our country, hate the idea of some sort of moral standards that they have to live by. But if there's a God, there's a moral standard. So you take God out of the picture, even if it makes you depressed. Some people would rather be depressed and unhappy and sad than believe that they have to live by some sort of moral code. That's the decision they've made. And they're going to stick with it. They're not changing. And then that's what Solomon addresses in the first chapter, is that idea. And he goes on in the rest of the chapter, beginning in verse 12 and through the end of this chapter, he talks about this human wisdom and human learning that's apart from God. Notice some of the things he says, beginning in verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. This is another place where there seems to be no doubt that this is Solomon, that he's referring to himself. He emphasizes the fact that he was the preacher more than the fact that he was the king. Notice that. I, the preacher, was king. See, what he's teaching, he thinks, is far more important than the fact he was a king, which is true. So he stresses the fact that he's teaching things. Remember, that's how he ends the book in Ecclesiastes 12. He talks about, I, the preacher, have put together these sayings and so forth so you can understand. And that's what, you know, that was something very important that he left. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom. And quite often, I've already mentioned this past couple of weeks, quite often when Solomon uses that expression, he's talking about human wisdom. Wisdom that's solely through, you know, your observations and so forth, that has nothing to do with God. God's left out of the picture. It's just, some people will call it naturalism today. Everything has a natural cause to it. So Solomon said, I set my heart, some translation says, I devoted myself. I devoted myself to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that's done under heaven. There's the under the sun idea again. It says, I devoted myself to finding out all of these things about nature by observing and doing these things. I'm going to find out all these things. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. Some of the other translations have some interesting words there. Like I said, one of us devoted himself. He devoted himself to acquiring this human wisdom. Human wisdom. Why does this happen? How does this happen? So on and so forth. So that's what I've done. And he calls it a burdensome task. He says it's weary. It causes you grief. Everybody, and I think about this, again, a lot because I deal with science all day long. I feel sorry for people who devote themselves, you know, they may spend 40-plus years doing things, finding out things in nature where they think that God had nothing to do with any part of it anywhere. Because you know, when those people are done with their life, they've wasted their life, just like Solomon says. It's not, it doesn't have any purpose. For them, they've thrown that time away. Solomon says, if that's all you do. Now, if you do that with the understanding that there is a God and He's left us a special revelation and all this, Solomon says, that's good. That's wonderful. And more people need to do that. But if you do it apart from God, where you're just looking at it completely under the sun, in a material, fleshly, worldly, natural sort of way, Solomon says that is just one burdensome task because you never can find the answers. Say you leave God out of the picture, Solomon says, you can't find all the answers. And even today, when you talk to different scientists about different topics, about things that they either don't fit or they contradict something, well, we just haven't quite figured that out. We just don't quite understand it well enough. Well, Solomon says you can never understand it fully. Doesn't make any difference how long the world's going to last. Solomon says you can't understand it fully. Some things are beyond our capability. They're just things that we cannot simply know. Either we can't do natural experiments, we can't make observations, and there's no way to know that. Just like scientists that think they know how the Earth was formed and the solar system was formed. Well, there's no way to know that naturally by experiment. It's impossible. There isn't anything to do. You can't make a world, so therefore you don't know how this one was made. And yet they come up with the idea that certain things happened, and they think that's the way it happened. Solomon says there are things you simply cannot know naturally. See, apart from God's special revelation, you can't know certain things. And that's one of them. So he says it's a burdensome, it's a tiring task, it's weary. Many people think that this is the highest calling in life, trying to, you know, human wisdom, adding to human wisdom. Solomon says that's a crazy idea. Says you will just tear yourself up with grief and being tired and weary because he says you simply cannot do it. It's like you're continually trying to reach for something that's not there. Like the carrot in front of the horse idea or donkey or whatever that illustration is. Just out of reach. It looks like you're about ready to grab it. That's what Solomon says about a lot of understanding. It's out of your reach and no one will ever be able to get there. It's impossible. Yeah, we're going to discover more things and maybe do some, and understand more things, but Solomon says you won't ever get to a point where you understand everything. That's God's realm. But for those people who don't believe in God, then you yourselves become a god. So therefore, if there's no limit, as many people think, to what that man can become their own god, then they think they can understand everything. Solomon says it's a burdensome task to believe that. It simply cannot happen. So he says, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. And remember, Solomon did everything imaginable during his life. He had limitless resources and anything he wanted to try and experiment on, he could get animals from any part of the world shipped in. You know, he had all kinds of things, all kind of animals brought in and ships and stuff to where he lived. And just everything. Solomon could do anything he wanted to. If there was a way to observe something or experiment on something, Solomon was capable of doing it. So it says, I've seen it all. And indeed, here's my answer, all is vanity. There's that word, useless, empty, purposeless, futile, vain, and grasping for the wind. There's trying to get the carrot in front of you that you can't get. You grasp for it, grasping for the wind. You've got it inside your hand. You open your hand and there's nothing there. Solomon said, that's what that's like. Trying to just live to get human knowledge and human wisdom and human understanding is like grasping for wind. When you open your hand, there's absolutely nothing there. That's why I said I feel sorry for people who that's their sole pursuit in life. Because that's what happens at the end of their life. They open their hand and there's nothing there. It's been a futile life. But so many people are doing that. So he says, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what's lacking cannot be numbered. Here's another way of saying, you know, kind of the same thing. There's a lot of things that, and I think I mentioned this last time when we talked about it, a lot of things that cannot be solved. There are certain things that simply cannot be solved. A lot of things probably fit in that category, but Solomon says there are. Doesn't make any difference how much time you pursue in doing it. You can't find the answer to it. It's unsolvable. And what's lacking cannot be numbered. There are certain things that you can't get enough information about. It's impossible. So Solomon says that if you use your whole life pursuing those type of things, Solomon says your life is futile. You've essentially wasted your life if you do it apart from God. See, it's all, that condition is always there. If you do it apart from God, you do it purely from a natural, fleshly, physical sort of way, it's empty and futile because it's such a burdensome task. And some things you simply cannot get an answer to. You can never have enough information or enough evidence or enough data or whatever to get an answer. So a lot of what people do, Solomon is saying, this, you know, intellectual pursuits or intellectual work, Solomon says, it is vain. It's empty. There's no eternal value to it because they're doing it apart from God. I love to see people who believe in God and their intellectual pursuits, especially in science. Really, really neat stuff. There was a couple of issues back in Reader's Digest. It was about this African-American doctor who was a pediatrician and did surgery on young people. And he's one of the most amazing pediatricians in the world. He believes in God. I don't know that article talked anything about it, but I know who he is, and I've read some of his works in religious magazines. He's a very religious person and relies on his belief in God to do a lot of his work that backs it. So that was an interesting article to me because I knew what he was really like and what he was pursuing and why. And it makes a difference. It makes a big difference. I don't like to go to doctors that I know don't believe in God. Believe that we're just an animal. I don't want somebody to work on my body that believes I'm just an animal like a dog or a cat or something. I went one of the guys I went to recently this past year was like that. Went once, never went back. He was arrogant on top of everything else, but that was the one thing that really turned me off. And that just bothered me. Because I want to go to a doctor who thinks this human body is very, very special, different than anything else on earth. That's the kind of person I want to go to. Solomon says that's the kind of person we should want to go to. We should want to. So Solomon says, verse 16, I've communed with my heart, saying, look, I've attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. Solomon says, I did find out a lot of stuff. I found all kinds of different things there. But he says, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Those two are really interesting words in Hebrew. I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out those words, but when we look at how he ends it, we understand what he's saying. He says, I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. He says, I my heart understood great wisdom and knowledge and found all of it. And he says, you know, that's still grasping for wind. When I opened my hand, there just wasn't anything of eternal lasting value there. Just empty. And so he concludes by saying, for in much wisdom is much grief. Now that's not godly wisdom, again, he's talking about. He typically talks about human wisdom. Wisdom that's apart from God, that doesn't have its base, you know, it's not based on a belief in God. That type of wisdom, he says, is much grief. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. That's what you're going to do. You increase in knowledge, but at the same time, don't believe in God and His part in the world and what He's done. He says, that's just going to bring you grief and sorrow, madness and folly. And that's exactly what happens. And that's how Solomon ends that section. Because those type of labors and pursuits, he says, apart from God, will never bring you any type of happiness. You know, we talked the first night about the idea of Ecclesiastes is finding the key to life, the key to happiness and joy in this world. And Solomon says throughout this, it's not found in human wisdom. It's not found under the sun. You have to go to the one that made the lock to get the key. And Solomon, in these chapters, gives people the key. And in the first part of the book, especially the first 6-7 chapters, he tells you where the key's not. He says it's not in human pursuits of wisdom, human pursuits of knowledge and understanding. He says that's not where the key is found. You're not going to find the key to life, key to happiness, looking there. All you're going to find is the key to sorrow and grief and madness and folly, all of those things. And what a tremendous lesson chapter 1 is to this world. I wish the world would understand Ecclesiastes chapter 1, because there would be a lot of differences, I think, in our world. Well, it looks like our time is about up. It's probably a good place to stop. I hope you're gaining something from Ecclesiastes. I know I am. There's a lot of lessons for us to learn. In Ecclesiastes, we're learning what life is about, what it consists of and what it doesn't consist of, and what we should be concerned about. Remember, one of the things Jesus said in his life was that there's a difference in what kind of treasure you should store up, which is kind of the same thing Solomon is talking about. Jesus said, you know, don't store up a whole bunch of stuff in this world, because people can steal it. He says thieves can break through and steal it. Different types of things can cause it to corrode and decay. And then at the end, there's nothing there. There's nothing there at all that has any eternal value. Solomon uses the phrase grasping for the wind. Well, Jesus is telling us if that's what you spend your life pursuing at the end of your life, there's nothing there. So he says instead of that, you need to send treasures on up into heaven where things don't decay. So instead of, you know, concentrating on all of these things, he says, you know, you need to fill your life with what's good. Because that's what a Christian, that's someone who has experienced the new birth, who's a new creature, had their sins washed away, that person is supposed to fill their life with good works. Because the Bible and Jesus repeatedly said that there will come a time when you account for how you've spent your life. What did you do with your life? We're only here for a short time, James tells us. It's like a vapor appears for a short while and then vanishes away. Solomon says the same thing later on in Ecclesiastes. Just here for a short time, so we have to make the most of it. So we become that new creature. We experience that new birth. And then we fill our life with doing things for others, helping others, and then, of course, coming together and worshiping. Tonight, as David leads us in this invitation song, the invitation is yours to come and experience the new birth in baptism, or to ask for help, for forgiveness, in your life, whatever the need, please come as we stand and sing this song.